We're talking with Lon Strickler, a creator of Phantoms and Monsters blog site. As mentioned, he casts a pretty wide net, looks at Bigfoot and cryptids, UFOs and ghosts. We'll be talking about some of those stories that he's covered and opening up the phone lines in this coming hour. Stay with us. Much more Coast to Coast AM to come. We're going to the phones in just a moment, Lon. A couple other quick questions, though. You said you had about 20,000 readers scattered all over the world. Is this the kind of thing where you get a report of a haunted house in Washington State? You can call up one of your readers or people who subscribe to the blog and say, hey, can you go check this out?
We have done that in the past. If there's somebody that I knew in the vicinity, I have done referrals. But most of the time now, right now, at this time point in time, if there's a case that seems fairly serious, I try to talk the person into putting an inquiry with Spirit Rescue International, and we do all our work remotely. Basically, it's all distance clearing, and that's normally what I do now.
Have you noticed, we sort of touched on this earlier, but I want to go back to it. Have you noticed any kind of a more of a willingness of people, researchers, to cross lines, cross topics? For example, you mentioned Stan Gordon, who is known as a UFO researcher, the Kecksburg case, who's now known as a UFO Bigfoot researcher. And I just wonder if there's, you notice more or less of a willingness to blur the lines between different paranormal type topics.
I think there is. In a couple of weeks, I'm going to be going to a phenomenology convention in Gettysburg, and there's going to be a lot of people there. And the big thing I'm going to be looking for is how open are all these people that are involved in the paranormal world to other things. But I have friends throughout the paranormal world, anything, Bigfoot, UFO, spiritual. And I think some people really are starting to, take it serious as a conglomeration, that these things are related somehow.
Well, having an open mind is important, but having an open mind that's able to discriminate total crapola is also pretty important. I mean, being intuitive enough to say that's a bunch of baloney.
You do get a few things. I don't like to dwell on it, but I do get a few unbelievable emails sometimes. I even phone calls, but like I said before, I like to give the people the benefit of the doubt, and I will follow up on most of it. And if I think it's valid, I'll go ahead and either find somebody to help investigate it for them, or go ahead, if they want, I'll go ahead and publish it.
I want to get into your pet theory or your predominant theory about UFOs, but we'll do that in a minute. I want to go first to the phone lines east of the Rockies, Mike in South Carolina. Good morning, Mike. How you doing?
Hey, Lloyd. How you doing? George, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Talked to the other George quite a few times through the years. It's been some time. But, I live here in the upstate of South Carolina. And what I'm curious about, I've seen things. I'm a 50-year-old man. I'm not on any kind of medication, alcohol, or anything like that, any kind of drugs. I live way out, okay? And when I mean way out, I got one neighbor behind me, and there's nobody behind him for just full mountain forest. There's mountains up here. There's actually several caves right here behind the house. A deer got killed about 2 weeks ago. We had a little ice storm, whatever, got hit by a truck. And into the driveway, I drug it down to the next driveway. That night, about 11:30 at night, there was a sound that came out that really unnerved me. I'm still unnerved. The sound sounded like a decimal point, sound like a male elk. They have a bellowing sound, but this was a sound that was just unnerving. And went outside, right on the porch. I'm not going to step right out, but I saw a pretty good sized object, dark, on back legs, two legs. And I have a pygmy goat, and that's what I do for a little bit of extra money through the time. But You know, I didn't holler at her or anything else. I just, you know, popped off two rounds in the ground, and it just turned and walked back. But then it stopped again once it got back in the tree line back towards the mountain and let out this other sound. I mean, I got a little bit of a recording of it, no digital stuff like that. It's just a little micro cassette recorder I've got. I've got a friend of mine. He is a BFRO hunter and everything, and he's been doing it for a long time. 30-some years, I guess, and he's not too far from me. But see, I fall right in the line of Rayburn County, Georgia, Oconee County, Pickens County, and then it goes on up into North Carolina and back around over in Tennessee.
You don't have that little recorder on you, do you?
I got it, but I don't think it would pull it through the phone. I'm on a cell phone, and it's an old one. I mean, it's not digital or anything else. And I don't have access to regular computers anymore. I use cell phones, and that's it. Those landline phones out here are ridiculous. But there's a cave back up here behind us, and the weird part about this cave, you can see it, but there's no access to it except rappelling off the rock or climbing up. How would this humongous hole, which to me is a cave, you see, it's uninhabited. You got millions of acres out here, and people, you don't see anybody walking at nighttime. You don't see anybody, once it gets a certain time of dark nighttime, you don't see anybody out.
So it sounded like an elk, but it sure didn't look like an elk.
Oh, it didn't look like no elk. And every night for the last 2 months, it's been active. Tree knocking, rocks clicking. Noises that are not, I'm not going to say noises, but sounds that's not made by no human. One other theory I'm curious about, I just throw it out there to you, I'll let you go. But what I've seen and the pictures of from this other guy that's been doing this BFRO stuff for 30 some years, I'll put it this way, his first name's Don. I can't say his last name, but some of his people out there probably know. But the one picture he's got on his cell phone is he goes out. And I went out one time with him, about seven other people a couple years ago. They had one of their meeting type things. And at nighttime, even with seven people, and you're out in the wilderness, and I've actually got hair. And they want to call it witch hair, but it's like this. These things live out in the forest, caves, old barns, whatever. They don't live in a house. So anything that lives outside, it's going to have fungus on it, especially if it's got a hair. And this hair is not, it's like mohair, but it's like, you know, each strip is probably 8 to 9 inches long. And it has a stench to it. I mean, other thing is, too, people say these things, how come they don't find the bones? Well, they're not human, but something that can walk on two legs. To me, if one of its family members died, they'd bury it. The other thing is, too, when some people believe in the Bible, some people don't. But when God cast Cain, because Cain killed Abel, God said he was going to put a mark in his forehead. And if anybody's really seen these things, they'll know that the front of their skull has an indentation in the front.
I'll tell you what, Mike, I'd be really interested in seeing the photo that your friend has. And if you could find that recording, I'm sure that that our guest Lon would like to hear it, too. Heck of a story.
Absolutely. If you could, and if there's any way to get access to the computer and send it off to me, I'd be more than willing to give you my opinion of what it is. To me, it sounds like it's probably a Bigfoot-like creature. But then again, you know, there's a possibility that there's a cryptid out there that we know nothing about. I mean, things are discovered every day. So,
Mike, if it's been going on every night, you should get somebody over there with a really good camera and see what you can get.
Well, I'm not going to say what kind of, you know, guns I have, but even the biggest one, you're not going to catch me outside. It's unnerving. I mean, you know, it's something that some people want to say that doesn't exist or anything, but I'll give you another one too. And this guy told me about it and everything else. They called it the Georgia Devil. And it's It's gone, literally gone around and just, you know, wiped people out, you know, murdered them, whatever you want to call it. Also, too, in South Carolina, down near Bennettsville, South Carolina, they got the lizard man down there. So, I mean, you know, people say what they want to. I got friends that live on up the road. A whole community saw something floating through the sky. It looked like a two-story building. So, you tell me.
Man, Mike, you got to get a good camera going. It sounds like a lot of interesting stuff going on in your backyard.
Out there, believe me.
Thank you. Appreciate the call. Very interesting stuff. Lon, let me ask you this. Have you ever heard any convincing recordings, Bigfoot, purported Bigfoot noises?
Well, yeah, I've actually heard some of these things myself. Some of the recordings that have come out of Southeast Ohio and Fayette County, Pennsylvania, are pretty convincing. Like I said, Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society has had recordings on investigations, and you know, there's something out there making these sounds. There's something that, you know, it's not a natural sound that, you know, that anybody would recognize, you know, as, you know, a known creature. The Sierra sounds is probably the standard recordings from Sierra, Nevada mountains. So, you know, I have heard a lot of recordings, but, you know, is it a Bigfoot? Yeah, it most likely is, but, you know, you can't really be positive.
Well, sure sounds like Mike's got some interesting stuff going on in his backyard. I sure hope he can get some, gosh, get a camera, Mike. West of the Rockies, Kevin in Lodi, California. I know that town well. I have family living there. Kevin, what's on your mind?
Oh, my word. I was concerned. I had missed some of the beginnings of concerning remote viewing. I've been asked to do remote viewing when I was kind of really, really, really weary of it, and given a book, oddly, by somebody with supposedly military background who actually did have some uncanny traits about him. And I had this book forever. It just seemed cheesy, and I wasn't going to read it. And I finally, after a few attempts, got into it, and oddly got to towards the end, and there were photos, and I had seen these photos from the very beginning, just as they described the place and things, and every one of these photos I'd seen exactly. Well, I had done political research prior to this for about 6 years, and I felt like I was the one researched, and this, so I won't say where, had been involved with a lot of things that you see the other side of the propaganda side of things. But one night walked out with a couple people late for a break and said, look over there, look at that star. And I looked at that star, and here comes a star, comes down, and it lights kind of go out, and it just looked like a star. So it was one of these drones, I think. Well, okay, I was doing about the remote viewing. My thing with the remote viewing is, as I've never heard or things that I've read from libraries that I get, what I had a memory of when I read this book was long before, and it seemed as if a dream, but it was so real, it was like constant to my mind, of flying with like electrodes on my body and my head, and landing on a Sacramento street to walk into a door saying, where do I go? How do I get in? Just walk through. And I walked through this building and up a few flights of stairs. I got into an old elevator with the accordion door. And I thought, well, this is dumb. And no electricity. It was a dark floor to that building. And I sort of went upstairs. I don't know how I went up the stairs. I don't think I had a body. But I walked into a room. It was like an old boardroom with Chinese men all around a table. And there were people like spirits walking around the room. And I don't know if these men were actually alive or in real time, but I was talking to people somewhere on the backside of me, you know, like where I started, and saying, do these men see me? There are people here. Do they see me? It's almost like they're transparent. They're looking at me, but they don't seem to see me. And they were saying, don't worry. Just do do as we say and such. And that always really, really bothered me. I heard your show last night with Jenna Hill, and she talked about the threats from the Scientology and stuff. Well, I had been threatened seriously badly, and have
Well, Kevin, we're sort of diverging here, covering a lot of topics. Let's let Lon take a bite at a stab at what you've told us so far. And that wasn't me hosting the show last night, but I heard it was a pretty good show. Lon, any reaction to what you're hearing so far?
Well, you know, it very well could be psychic remote viewing. So it seems like some people are able to astrally project themselves into situations like that, where, you know, they're at one place, and it doesn't seem like people that they're seeing are paying attention to them or such. It may be some clairvoyance involved with that as well. You know, the remote viewing that I'm involved with is coordinated remote viewing, scientific remote viewing, where we actually have a monitor and the person who's actually doing the remote view. And the psychic aspect of it will come into it at some point, normally in the last phase. We run a four-phase coordinate remote view, and the psychic aspect does usually kick in. But as far as being able to do it without a monitor, that seems more like astral projection to me.
Is there some kind of risk involved with the remote viewing? Kevin seemed to have some concerns about whether or not he should be trying it or not.
I've never run into a problem myself. I have read of people that do run into problems. There have been times where people have actually gotten into places where they shouldn't have gotten into using remote viewing. I guess it could be very dangerous if that's the situation you're getting into.
You ever hear stories? I mention this because Ingo Swann, who just died a couple of years ago, there are stories about him encountering some other kind of intelligence that sort of says, hey, you're going too far, and issues a warning. You ever run into something like that doing remote viewing? That some other kind of...
One time. Yeah, it did happen to me one time when I was being trained. We had actually... Irene had actually targeted a scenario to an underground, underground alien base. And it was just as a training exercise. But as I got into it, I was getting, I was coming in contact with all types of different alien forms.
And they're saying, hey, who are you?
Yeah,
who are you, and what are you doing here?
One of them recognized that I was there. And she pulled me out quickly, you know, when she found out what was going on.
But, I mean, it's basically they recognize you're there and you're not welcome.
Yeah.
All right. Our conversation with Lon Strickler of Phantoms and Monsters continues. We've got a couple of folks on the phone lines. We'll get to as many of your calls as we can. Into our final segment with my guest Lon Strickler, creator of Phantoms and Monsters blog site. Had some pretty good calls so far, and we got a couple of more folks on the line. We'll get to as many of your calls as we can in our final segment on Coast to Coast AM. Our final segment here on Coast to Coast for this evening anyway. Lon, a quick question before we go back to the phones. We haven't even touched on ghosts, and that's such a big chunk of what you put out on Phantoms and Monsters, encounters with specters, haunted houses, things of that sort. What do you think is going on there? Do you have a theory about ghosts that do you think people are mistaken or spooked and they're reporting things that aren't really there, or that these beings, entities, whatever, are really the spirits of dead people that are floating in and out of our reality?
I think for the most part, people do make a report saying that they're experiencing something, that there actually is something going on. The majority of these hauntings are earthbound spirits. Basically, a person person had passed away, and their energy remains on this plane. And a lot of times, they'll either be here because of something that's left unfinished, that they feel they need to watch over somebody, or just simply that they don't know they're dead. That's what most of the reports do come out to. But I do think people are, for the most part, experiencing real tangible energy.
How often do you get something that it's evil, that it's malevolent, that it really causes harm and scares the hell out of people?
You know, it's rare. You hear a lot of times about these demons and such, but, you know, I just basically think evil is evil, and these are malevolent earthbound that were a bad people when they were alive, and sometimes that in turn turns into an earthbound that acts the same way. But it's rare. It does happen. Sometimes, a lot of people think the poltergeist activity is a malevolent spirit when really it's a twofold. Sometimes it can be a manifestation of an actual spirit, but most of the time it's a thought form or self-manifested entity from somebody who lives in the residence.
Teenagers, kids?
Well, it, for the most part, it can be younger. I'd say, a lot of times there's a child that's going through puberty, most of the time a female, but it can happen to any age.
Appreciate that. Back to the phone lines. First-time caller, Pat in Maryland. Good morning, Pat.
Oh, hi. Hi, George, and hi, Lonnie. This is the first time I've gotten through. I'm so nervous, but I have so much to say.
Okay.
First of all, you came to Maryland last year or the year before for the Mysteries of Sky and Space Conference.
Yeah, a couple years ago.
Right. You spoke about skinwalkers. That was the first time I've ever heard of that. And I have to be honest, when you started out, I watch you on television all the time, okay? I follow you where you go. And when you started out talking about skinwalkers, I have to admit it was just overwhelming. It was like, oh, how much more of this can any of us take? But I've since investigated it, and it's just absolutely fascinating. And what was I going to say? Like I said, I'm nervous. Lonnie, I understand that you are in Sykesville, Maryland.
Yeah, I actually live just outside of Baltimore in Randallstown.
In where?
Randallstown.
Oh, okay. I'm in Lansdowne, Maryland, and I have some relatives out in Sykesville, and I heard you talking about Bigfoot out there in Sykesville. I get the Pennsylvania blog. I also get yours all the time, the Phantoms and Monsters, and I'm into everything that you send to me because I'm a very open-minded person. I'm also a UFO investigator for the Aerial Phenomena Investigations Team here in Maryland. And when I went on the Pennsylvania Bigfoot blog, they're having so many sightings there that they're asking just the average human being that's interested in this, that has a sincere interest, to help them because they're having so many different types of sightings. Were you aware of that?
Oh, yeah. Well, absolutely. They are looking for people to help, people that will put the time in to help, because believe me, Pennsylvania, for whatever reason, has got a lot of tangible Bigfoot sightings. And it's all, and it's funny, Maryland, for the size of Maryland, has its share of Bigfoot sightings as well. But Pennsylvania is really inundated with these creatures, apparently, but there are a lot of sightings.
Pennsylvania is such a big state. I would think Maryland is much smaller, of course, and settled, so much of it's settled, but Pennsylvania, gosh, there's a lot of wide open spaces there even now.
Yeah, there are a lot of places to hide in Pennsylvania.
Well, Pat, what are you going to say?
We haven't gotten that many UFO sightings here, but they've picked up in the past year. And, George, I wanted to ask you, I know you follow the skinwalkers really closely. Are you aware of the fact that Colonel John Alexander has made a deal with the FAA so that all the UFO reportings are now sent directly to Bigelow?
Yeah, it's been a couple of years.
I heard about that about 3 years.
It has been. Oh, okay. I wasn't aware of that. I thought it was something new.
Yeah, it's not really that mysterious. In fact, I think they announced it on Coast to Coast when the deal was made. The problem is that there's nobody that investigates UFOs. So the Bigelow organization, it's now known as BASS, said, hey, we'll do it. If you'll send us the stuff, we'll take a look at it. So they became sort of the repository for these reports, which, you know, a lot of people look at it as some dark conspiracy. I think, I know these guys, but I think it is a positive development because at least somebody takes the reports and looks into them. Lon?
Yeah, I didn't have a, you know, I don't have a problem with it. When the situation was involved, when Bigelow was involved with MUFON, that was turning out to be a fiasco as far as I'm concerned then. But, you know, that stopped. I don't really know if Bass is still receiving reports from MUFON. I don't know. But and that situation was a little strange, and there were some questions about that. But no, if they can get people qualified to investigate these reports, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise they go completely uninvestigated, and their reports
and
go nowhere.
That's the problem right now. You know, I this is the one thing, the one complaint I have with MUFON, and it doesn't. It's not as far as the UFO reports. Plus the UFO reports and the entity reports, MUFON, for whatever reason, just doesn't seem to put much effort into investigating entity reports.
Well, that's why I don't, I don't understand why there's so much suspicion about Bigelow, whose organization, I mean, I know these guys, so I am a little bit biased, but they put up money. They say, we'll investigate this stuff. MUFON, you don't have a lot of money to do it. We'll give you money to do it. And then, there's, of course, it becomes a grand conspiracy. Evil Bigelow has taken over MUFON, and the stories run wild. And I use that with sort of air quotations around it. But it could be a whole subject of a show at some point. I'd rather have somebody from the Bigelow organization here to talk about it other than put it on you. I'll tell you this, Pat, thank you for the call. We'll go to Paul in Kodiak, Alaska on the wild card line. Been holding for a while. Hi, Paul. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Lon. This is a question to you as well as to George, who had a previous guest in the first hour and second hour. It's sort of an overlap of the two concepts that you both have talked about. I was going to bring up the idea of the concept of Das Übermensch, which was brought in German philosophy in the late 1880s and 1890s. And what it was is, you know, the idea of a superman. And it was a reaction to the Industrial Revolution at that time, where people were becoming slaves to their machines. And at that time, if you're familiar with all the literature that came out, we had many things like Mary by Shelley, Frankenstein was coming out. I don't know if the werewolf in the modern sense came out. I mean, that was a concept that was around for many, many centuries. But many, many books had come out at that time. And I'm wondering if all of that is maybe possibly a reaction to us becoming less biological, and that's our protection by having more of these critters coming. I'm not saying that they don't exist. Some of them maybe do, like Bigfoot. But what is your insight on something of that nature?
Wow. You know, you may have a point there. I really don't have a comment. I don't know. That really threw me. I don't know what to say about that.
Well, you know what? That would be a very human kind of reaction, and I think it's entirely plausible. It seems like that's a reasonable and predictable way that humans would react to an unsettling situation. The kind of stuff that we talked about in the first 2 hours of tonight's show. I mean, it's encouraging. Ray Kurzweil was very very convincing in talking about the benefits of technology and the bright future that we all have. But it's still scary. When you see that we have drones flying in the skies, we have the ability to conduct surveillance on every email that we send, every cell phone call that we make. Technology is also, it gives us a lot and it takes a lot away. It's scary.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was going to bring up the idea that even remote viewing, you know, the whole, you know, setup of that, I feel is our protection maybe of our biological self, that we're trying to rekindle, you know, our humanity by trying to use a power that we in ourselves can utilize as opposed to using a machine to do, you know, the same thing. Or, you know, others to do it, you know, if we can just, you know, develop something in our own self. So, well, you know, I'm seeing things of that nature.
Well, that's a great theory, Paul. That's a great theory. Okay. Lon, anything to add?
No, I do think remote viewing, it's a great tool to have in our, you know, in what we do. And, you know, it's something a machine can do.
You're right, Paul. That's a good point, is that it's something that's within humans that that machines haven't learned to do yet. And hopefully it will not become computerized. Thanks for the call. Sheila in Sacramento on the Wildcard Line. Good morning, Sheila.
Hello. I had to cut off the radio. Oh, I'm calling because of two things. I had a ghost in my house, and the minister told me how to get rid of it by ignoring it totally. And said, don't communicate with it, open up the Bible, and don't read the Bible to it either. And it did go away. And the second thing that I'm concerned about is the flying saucer. When I went to Las Vegas with a friend of mine, and what happened was the it was close to the car. First, it came from around the bend. The first thing that happened on Highway 58 was that there was a truck that acted like it was stalled, and I think that they were just trying to cover up. But it was a truck that was stalled across two sides of the highway, and it acted like it couldn't get by. But then people figured how to get under the truck in a ditch and go under the truck in the back of it. And so, and when I got on the other side, there was a short line of people trying to get on the other side of the truck. And when I got on the other side, there were no other cars, but yet I was in line with cars. And then here comes the saucer. I thought it was a police car. It was red and blue, vivid lights. And what happened was I thought it was a police car. I just saw two big lights, red and blue, and it came around the bend. And it seemed, I don't know.
Hey Sheila, happened. Let's slow down here. Let's take them one at a time. You told us a story about ghosts and that your priest told you to get rid of it by ignoring it. Lon, any thoughts on how well that approach works?
Well, you know, I don't think it's wise to talk to these things. You know, ignoring it, if you can ignore it, and it's not to the point where it's causing any problems, if you ignore it, that's the best solution, quite honestly.
And any comments about Sheila's flying saucer story?
No. I don't know about that.
Sheila, I don't know what to tell you. That's a heck of a story, and I'm happy to hear more about it since it happened in my neck of the woods, Las Vegas. If you want to send me an email, I'd appreciate you telling me more, but thanks for the call. East of the Rockies, Richard in Illinois might be our last call of the night. What's on your mind, Richard?
Hi, George.
Hi.
Hey, listen, I just turned 60 here last November. Anyway, I was 14 or 15. Me and a buddy went hunting up the Burlington Northern Tracks between the town of Dayton and Wedron. And we just got a heavy snow. We had about 10 to 12 inches of snow. And we made it all the way up to almost Wedron to where the silica pits were. And then we turned and went across the tracks and come back the other side. And we were pretty well gassed out because it was a long walk in the deep snow. Anyway, we got within about a half mile of the Dayton Cemetery. And we weren't talking. We were pretty well winded. Anyway, I heard something growling and snarling. Then Jimmy walked up by me and we both was looking. There was a big canine creature, okay, and there was a 4 or 5 strand barbed wire fence that it was on the other side along the timber line, and there was a big orange moon coming up on the east side of the river. The river run north and south. Anyway, it come up to the edge of the fence. I had a 20 gauge single shot, and I think Jimmy had a 12 gauge single shot. Anyway, I had mine cocked, and I imagine he had his cocked too, and it's stood up, and there was about 4 or 5 feet of it over the top of the fence. It was huge. It was terrifying. Anyway, it had red eyes. They were just as red as they could be. And it wasn't from the moonlight, because the moon was still on the east side of the river coming up. Anyway, we took off. And we usually cut down to the east side of the cemetery and went down through the woods back to the Burlington Northern Tracks. But we were too scared to go that way. So we went around the cemetery on the west side, and we ran all the way to his house. And his dad and some buddies was down in the basement there. They had a room down there. They were playing cards, and we ran down and told them what had happened to us. And they didn't believe us at all. But it was terrifying. Do you have any ideas what that would be?
Wow, that's a heck of a story, Richard.
Okay.
Lon, you ever heard anything like that?
Yeah. Well, Illinois is very close to Wisconsin, and that, you know, there are a lot of these dogman, werewolf type stories that come out of that area. It is funny you mentioned the graveyard or cemetery. For whatever reason, a lot of these cryptids, and I'm talking about these dogmen and Bigfoot, seem to be seen near graveyards. I don't know what the connection is, but there are a lot of reports of these things being seen around, you know, cemeteries.
The red eyes, yeah, wow.
He may want to send an inquiry over to Linda and see what she says about it. You know, since she's written about the werewolves and the dogmen.
Hey, Richard, appreciate that call. That's a fascinating story. It sounds like a combination of the Hound of the Baskervilles and the Mothman with the red eyes. Lon, I really appreciate you being on the program. Best of luck to you with Phantoms and Monsters. I do enjoy getting it every single day.
Well, thanks for having me on, and thanks for reading, George.
Absolutely. You keep us in the loop. Thanks also to my friends and colleagues there at Coast to Coast and Premier, David and Gina, Tim Binal, Dan Galante, and to my earlier guest, Ray Kurzweil. I'll be back next month, everyone. Good night.